The Ashland Forest Resiliency Stewardship Project, often called just AFR by the people connected to it, is meant to keep the hills above Ashland from suffering a catastrophic wildfire. A big fire would be a very bad thing on the slopes that make up the watershed for the city of Ashland. A lot of work went into planning it. A lot of work is still going on carrying out the plan, and today's guests have a few bones to pick with it all. Jay Leininger and Eric Navickas filed suit in federal court over AFR, and a recent appeals court ruling confirmed the trial court view. Oddly, both sides say it's good for them. Jay Leininger is a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. Jay, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks.
And Eric Navickas is a citizen activist and former Ashland City Council member. Eric, thank you for joining us once again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Jay, you're a fire ecologist. Did you agree with the intentions of AFR, the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project, just as a concept?
Yeah, I helped plan it. I participated in a group of experts convened by the City of Ashland, its Forest Lands Commission, in 2004 to develop for the Forest Service a community alternative that it would consider in addition to its proposed action for the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project. And over the course of several months, 12 of us developed a series of recommendations that some of which were easy to come by and some of which were negotiated through some effort. And none of us walked away from the process happy that we had achieved everything that we wanted from it individually, but we all left feeling that we could live with it. And so I had every intention of supporting the AFR project from start to finish. Unfortunately, some of those negotiated agreements, what I consider to be minimal confidence-building measures that would ensure that the project wouldn't cross some ecological red lines, were abandoned. And so we wanted to find a way to make our point in a dignified fashion that some of those agreements should have been respected.
And Eric Navickas, were you on the city council when the AFR plan was solidified?
Yeah, I was on the city council, and I was also council liaison to the Forest Lands Commission and saw a lot of the deliberations go on and when these agreements were backed away from. So I was party to all the conversations at that point.
So generally, you guys are okay on the concept, but not so big on the ultimate execution of it?
Well, the overriding point of the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project is that severe ecological damage has been done over several decades through the active suppression of natural fire. That is the fundamental issue here. And so AFR is, though a reactive response to that problem, nonetheless necessary to achieve the ultimate goal, what I consider to be the ultimate goal, of restoring natural fire process to Ashland's fire-evolved watershed. Now, I don't feel that it's possible to log our way out of the problem. I think that fire use ultimately is necessary, and indeed that's what the City of Ashland called for in its Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which again I helped co-write. It's a long-term process, I'm hopeful that that's the end goal that we achieve with it.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that that I agree with Jay that fire suppression has been a major issue for the Ashland watershed. At the same time, a lot of people are unaware of the amount of logging that has taken place and the severe impacts in relation to fire that has caused. Beginning in the 50s, the Forest Service began a very aggressive campaign of logging, and they were using the banner of fuel reduction to do these projects. They completed 30 to 50 acre clear cuts under the banner of fire reduction. And now these areas have become some of the worst problems in the watershed because they've opened the canopy and created brush fields. So it's not just fire suppression, it's also the Forest Service management that they've done under the banner of fuels reduction that has created a lot of the problems that exist up here. And that's what I'm seeing continuing in this project is removal of too much overstory canopy. And what the canopy does in a forest is it shades areas and keeps them cool and moist. And when you open that up, you dry out the forest and create a more fire-prone situation, as well as create a vegetative response where you get lots of small-diameter fuels coming in. My feeling would be that the best way we could deal with this project is through non-commercial means going in. And a lot of this project does include non-commercial fuels management, but coming in from below and taking out small diameter brush. And there are lots of problems up there as a result of this past logging and fire suppression as well.
Eric Navickas and Jay Leininger are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Have some issues big enough with the Ashland Forest Resiliency Project to take it to court. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or jx@jeffnet.org. So are you just saying that no tree removal would have been good, or just some tree removal up to a certain size? I mean, what are we hearing here?
My belief is that we could do it without tree removal involving logging and resource extraction. A lot of people think that, oh, we can just remove some of the trees and it has no impacts. But there's also a large impact to the road infrastructure as a result of that. And the Ashton Creek watershed and the reservoir is listed as water quality limited due to sedimentation. And when you begin to use those roads heavily, you impact them, and you can have problems from mass wastage and landsliding after that. And that's been the problem historically with the Ashland watershed, is road blowouts. And we saw this in the 97 flood, a major road blowouts that dumped tons of sediment into the reservoir. So the more we use those roads, the more impact it's going to have. I think there is means to do this non-commercially using prescribed fire and small diameter pile and burn projects. And possibly some larger diameter falling and leaving on the site. Large woody debris in a forest is always a good thing for maintaining moisture in the forest. So as soon as you start to haul logs out, there's always a financial incentive as well. And I think that's been the problem with this project once again, is there's always a balance of that financial incentive that comes into play, and they push the limit a little bit too far. And that's what we feel happened in this project.
That discussion of downed material and moisture brings up a chicken and egg kind of question. I mean, you get in a situation, Jay Leininger, where people are saying we can't leave this stuff there because it'll be too dry and it'll be fire fuel. And you're saying, no, if you leave it there, you will create the moisture. I mean, does it get to that sort of angle?
Well, one point that I take from what Eric is saying, and I think it's a good one, is that everything's connected. And, certainly there are, site-specific reasons to cut trees, even big trees, I think, in my view, for very specific purposes. One of the things that we were trying to accomplish with the community alternative to the AFR project that was not ultimately adopted was to install transparency in any decision to cut a very large tree. The largest trees in the watershed are the most fire-resistant, so removing them is actually counter to the purpose of fire hazard reduction. And in fact, there is a commercial incentive when the record of decision for the project allows the removal of more than 80,000 such trees in the AFR project. So that was one of our biggest concerns, the reason why we thought we needed to bring litigation, to provide a backstop, to lay down a marker, to say, well, there are some things that should happen, like some intentional thinning, but there are some things that should not happen, and there was too much discretion, too much room for abuse in this record of decision. We thought it was important to provide some sideboards. So without getting into the site-specific treatment details, it's not possible. There's so much variability in the Ashland watershed from top to bottom that we could be here all day.
You must have tried administrative appeals, I'm thinking, before you got to a lawsuit?
Yeah, we had to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And no success there, obviously. So what were you seeking to do through the lawsuit? Were you looking for injunctive relief to actually stop the project or stop some aspect of it?
We never asked to block the project with an injunction. And it's interesting because 1 week after we filed the lawsuit, the Forest Service actually withheld $2 million from it.
That was stimulus money, wasn't it?
It was stimulus money. It ultimately got $6 million. And actually, our U.S. senators, Mr. Wyden and Merkley, protested that move, and the money was quickly restored by the chief of the Forest Service. So, in effect, we had an injunction for a week, but we didn't ask for it. And even though we have this favorable ruling now from the court, it remains to be seen what the impact of this lawsuit is going to be. Nobody can predict that with any confidence at this point. But again, it was important to identify the excessive discretion that was embedded in this decision and to simply ask that the forest plan that's been in place since 1990 get implemented.
The Northwest Forest Plan?
Actually,
the plan specifically for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest?
Precisely. The local forest plan is what contains the soil protection standards on which that litigation was based.
Does it ultimately just get down to a numbers game then, gentlemen? Because, I mean, you've got people like Darren Borges from the Nature Conservancy involved in this project. These are groups that are generally known, along with Lomakotsi Restoration Project, for not being terribly reckless with the landscape. But is it just a matter of the numbers, the percentage of soil protection?
I think what Jay's talking about, discretion. What they allowed in this project was logging in any case, but the decision would be up to the logger on the ground making that decision. So they could go into extremely sensitive areas with high landslide potential and cut trees. So what our lawsuit says is, no, there are clear limits here, and the law still applies in these heifer-based, Healthy Forest Restoration Act-based projects. You can't just have discretion everywhere. So we've drawn some clear lines that they can't go into highly landslide-prone areas. They can't go into riparian areas. So that's the basis of our lawsuit. And I think this has large precedent across the landscape with other projects as well, that now we've set a precedent that they can't just say that they have broad discretion anywhere and it's up to the decision maker on the ground. There are clear lines drawn in the sand now.
I would add to that, Jeff, that you asked about the contractors who were involved with implementing this. And I would specifically single out Lomakotsi Restoration Project as a very conscientious operator. I used to work for them. I have the utmost respect for what they do. And, in fact, they are actively training new workers in the watershed, dozens, to pick up these very highly technical skills. I think Ashland's very lucky to have them working. Now, unfortunately, the project is designed such that if the contractors change or if the administration in Washington, D.C. changes, it could be a whole new ballgame in the Ashland watershed. So that was the point of this lawsuit, is to ensure that if those things happen, then the worst things embedded in the decision won't happen.
So these are the standards. You hold to the standards no matter what. Mm-hmm. That's the essence of it.
Right. And you asked about a numbers game. I recall reading a quote from the Nature Conservancy in the newspaper saying that they're achieving 94% effective ground cover. Well, that's true in a lot of places, but it's also true on some of the areas that have been detrimentally disturbed by heavy machinery on skid trails where trees are literally dragged over the soil, creating large amounts of exposed soil, compacted soil. And we've seen this in the western portion of the watershed and more recently in the Four Corners area on the Neal Creek Divide to the east, where there are extensive areas of demolished granite soil from these tractor logging operations. And in order to achieve that level of ground cover, that 94%, it requires spreading fine woody slash, which is highly flammable and likely to burn very intensely once ignited. So it's, again, kind of counterproductive to the purpose of the project.
So does anything change with AFR as it currently stands? Or does it get to proceed as it's been going?
Well, for now it will proceed. We are going back to the district court to ask for injunction based on the merits. So we will go back, and more than likely, we will be asking for a supplemental environmental impact statement to do some mapping of the highly prone areas to landslide, and that may cause some injunction in the commercial elements of the project. But we haven't come to a conclusion, and that will be up to the district judge as well, what they're willing to give us as far as limiting this project directly.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we're not in a position to be able to prejudice the remedy stage of the litigation. But, certainly, things have to change on some level with the posture of the project in order to make it legal.
All right, Eric Navickas, before we go, I just want to ask about your opposition to the ski area expansion up at Mount Ashland as well. Is this all of a piece, though, the opposition to AFR and the opposition to that?
Yeah, I've been very concerned with the Ashland Municipal Watershed for many years. So there's definitely cumulative impacts from both of these projects. And just last year, actually, we saw the city having to remove large amounts of sediment from the catchment basins that are just above the reservoir. So we're seeing continued sediment loads coming down. And we're not sure if this is a result of this AFR project or not. But the ski area as well is an issue of deep concern to me, because they are continuing to push forward with the expansion. And though financially they're having difficulty right now, we could see something change within a year or two. And now they do have court blessing Though there is another pending lawsuit from the Sierra Club that could stop that.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us know where you guys stand on both those issues. Eric Navickas is a citizen activist and former Ashland City Council member. Jay Leininger is a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.